Hey, podcast listeners, it's Chris popping in here to let you know you can now find Think on Instagram. That's where I'll be sharing book recommendations, favorite moments from recent shows, and occasional behind-the-scenes looks at how Think gets made. So while you're listening to today's podcast, I hope you'll give us a follow. Just search for K-E-R-A Think. Okay, now on to today's show. Not going to sugarcoat this, I'm about to describe an experiment that will strike a lot of modern listeners as macabre at best. In a technique known as parabiosis, scientists surgically attached the circulatory systems of an old mouse and a young mouse so that, a little like some conjoined twins, the blood each mouse's body contained and produced also flowed into the other animal. They expected the old mouse to get biologically younger and the young mouse to age faster. Now, it sounds like something dreamed up by a mad scientist in a 19th century horror novel, but this actually played out at the Harvard Stem Cell Institute just a few years ago. And what's even more surprising? It worked. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Actually, scientists have already understood that a blood swap between mice of different ages could work this way. What they wanted to know was why, and now they've turned the investigation to another question. Could this also work for humans? Eileen Zimmerman is a journalist. Her fascinating article about this, titled "Can a Magic Protein Slow the Aging Process?" appeared recently in the New York Times. Eileen, welcome to Think.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So the idea behind parabiosis is actually pretty ancient, right? Folks have long imagined there might be some kind of secret sauce in the blood of young people and young animals and wanted to harness that for older folks.
Yes, apparently, from what I understand, parabiosis is not, even though it was new to me, is something that's been done a lot in research. And so these researchers at Harvard joined a young mouse and an old mouse to see what the effects would be of the young blood, basically, in the old mouse. And they were very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, and it's not just a transfusion, right? The old and young mouse were surgically joined together. What do you know about how that was done? Where were they joined together?
I don't actually know how that was done. I mean, I don't know the mechanics of that. I just know that it's not, to me, it seems like Frankensteinian. I don't know how they did it, but yeah. They are able to join the circulatory systems of the two animals. Like you said, like conjoined twins. And what happened was the younger blood circulating in the younger mice did, the younger blood circulating in the older mice had a really positive effect on the aged systems in the older mice. It sort of revascularized in some ways, according to these scientists, the brain. So it created new blood vessels and also in the heart, not new blood vessels, but sort of repaired and regenerated blood vessels. So they became stronger. And one of the scientists that led the brain research, which was Dr. Lee Rubin, he said that it reverted the biology of the old brain to the biology of a younger brain. And it did it mechanistically. He said it's like an improved vascular function. So there was more blood flow to the brain, and the brain started to actually resemble a younger brain rather than an older brain. And it's the similar effects they saw in the heart, where blood vessels that were weakened and that were older, suddenly they were stronger and they seemed newer and more elastic, and it improved blood flow. And all of those things were very promising. And Dr. Rubin told me they kept thinking this kept happening when they did it and repeated it. And they thought, what is the magic stuff in the blood?
That was their big challenge, right? They had to identify this protein. I do want to talk about that. But first, what happened to the young mouse? The young mouse got the bad end of this deal.
Yeah, I know. I don't think anything negative actually happened to the young mouse. It was all the effects on the older mouse. It may be that they weren't looking for any effects from old blood in a young mouse. I mean, I don't think it certainly wasn't mentioned to me that the younger mouse aged.
Okay.
All the effects seem to be that the older mouse, the brain and the heart, became that or resembled that of a younger mouse. I know, I thought that too, but I don't think anything negative necessarily happened. I mean, other than the fact that it was joined to another mouse.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a great effect, but yeah.
So they landed on this protein GDF11, which I guess mice make and humans make as well. What did it take to figure out that that was the substance that seemed to be having these effects?
They somehow, I guess process of elimination, they saw that it was the GDF11 they identified by determining what proteins have different effects. And I guess they knew that GDF11 in the past had had some positive effects in research, regenerative effects, things like that. And then when they isolated it, process of elimination somehow in scientific research, it came down to that. And when they retested it using just the GDF11 by injecting that into mice and seeing the effect it would have in their brains and in their heart and even in skeletal muscle, they saw this regenerative and revascularization, it's a hard word to say, in these aging mice and in mice generally. So their process of elimination worked. How they decided on it, I didn't learn that in reporting the piece. I just know that as they started to eliminate what they thought it might be, it came down to that, and that's what they discovered.
Do you happen to know how long it took for the bodies of these older mice to start to show improvements?
I don't. But apparently everything is faster in mice. Mm. So it wasn't like they had to wait years. I don't know, but it definitely happened fairly quickly. I think it was in repeated experiments they saw it. So I'm sorry, I don't know that answer.
It's okay. Why is it that mice are so often the starting point for experiments on therapies and other things that might eventually be translated to humans?
Well, I talked to a guy, a Dr. Richard Miller, who's a professor of pathology at the University of Michigan, and he directs their Paul Glenn Center for Aging Research. And he said mice are, they're not similar to humans, but they are kind of similar to humans in that they have the same organs, the same cell biology, the same neurons and neurotransmitters, and they often respond to the same drugs. So not to say that it's a perfect match, but it's a pretty good close match. And so if he says the drugs that work in mice, not all of them are going to work in people, but some of them will, a lot of them will. So screening drugs in mice is a really great way to figure out which drugs are likely to work well in people. It's a really good first screen, he said. For instance, drugs that prevent pain in mice generally affect pain in people too, and the same for blood pressure and drugs that we commonly use. And they also do experiments, mice is a starting point, rats, but they also do them on dogs and obviously chimpanzees and stuff. Those are all considered similar biologically, neurobiologically to people. So that's why it's so common to use mice and rats.
What do we know about GDF11 levels over the course of a normal mammal life when it's not sort of being isolated in an experiment? Like, do we have less naturally as we get older?
Well, there was some controversy over that when this research first came out. The folks that founded Alevian, the company that's based around GDF11, their research and what they had learned, their research and what they say the research shows is that over a person's lifetime, levels of GDF11 go down, which would make sense if you see GDF11 as this protein that really helps kind of make us more youthful and, keep us, our blood vessels more elastic and our brains producing more neurons and things. These are things you associate with being younger, chronologically, age-wise, and less so as you get older, where you have coronary artery disease and things like that. So they say that it went down as you got older. There was another team at Novartis at the time, and this is around 2014, 2015, that said that this wasn't true, that at least, and I believe it was for skeletal muscle, that GDF11 did not go down over time. It went up over time, I think they said they found. And there was this whole controversy over the methods used to determine whether the levels went up or down and what it did. And so the Novartis team said, the Alevian team is wrong. Alevian did more research and countered and said, no, we were right, because you tested using this thing. And, it was like this whole, it was much more about how things were tested than the results at the time. It was how things were tested. But ultimately, Mark Allen, who's the CEO and a doctor who heads the company, says they conducted numerous tests, they retested to make sure that they could validate their results. And they found that GDF11 did go down over time and that adding it to a mice or a rat body, and and can make that mouse or that rat seem younger in terms of their vasculature, especially that the blood vessels regenerate, regrow, and neurons, especially in the hippocampus part of the brain, which is responsible for learning and memory. So they claim that their results are absolutely correct, and they've repeated it many times. The thing is, they haven't published the results of their work yet. And the CEO said to me that they don't, the reason they haven't is because it's not a priority, because to get funding and to move forward with research as a pharmaceutical company, they don't need to publish it yet. But he says they've revalidated it. I went back to the guy, the doctor, David Glass, who had been at Novartis at the time, who challenged the results. And he said he sort of still stands by the skeletal muscle issues, where he thinks GDF11 goes down in that sense. But he left open the possibility that GDF11 could be a therapeutic, and that in heart and brain, he didn't really comment. So that's a roundabout way of saying the thinking is that it goes down over our lives, our lifetimes, but that's been somewhat controversial.
So this whole company, Alevion, was formed in 2017 around this research, right? Is their mission to sort of find a way to turn around the aging process?
Well, they certainly wouldn't say that. Only because, as you mentioned in the intro, it's really hard to find a therapy to treat aging, because aging isn't a disease per se. It's just the natural process of living. But there are a lot of diseases that are associated with aging. As we get older, I think the current thinking is every 8 years, your chance of getting a disease that is a disease that could be fatal doubles. So the chances of getting cancer, arthritis, or all kinds of maladies double every 8 years as you get older. So their goal now is to use GDF11 to treat stroke, because that is the way into the market, is to find a treatment where another good one doesn't really exist. And stroke has very limited treatments. And so that's how they're trying to get into the market. But I think ultimately, yes. I think GDF11 seems to be seen as potentially something that could really help aging, help our health span. You know, a lot of times when we talk about this, it's like, oh, we're going to live to 130 or 150. But Mark Allen, who's the CEO, said the goal really is to make us age more healthfully, so that we increase the health span, so that instead of being an 80-year-old with lots of maladies, whether they're cognitive problems, heart disease, arthritis, blood pressure, you can age healthfully. You can be an 80-year-old with healthier heart vessels and more neurons in your brain and more blood vessels in your brain and less arthritis and whatever, you know, less diabetes, whatever that is. So your health span, the period of life when you're generally healthy, is much longer than it is now. And I think that's ultimately the goal with this.
And it seems like that's a trade a lot of people would make. I mean, living to 120 might be astonishing, but I think a lot of people would rather have like 90 great years and drop dead than 20, 15 or 20
Absolutely.
years of disease on the end of that.
That's exactly right. I mean, there's a lot of philosophical and moral questions about a population that could live to 120, 130. And, you know, when I did the interviews for the story, the CEO had said, you know, we want to make 100 the new 50. But that doesn't mean that they want to make 120 the new 60. Like, that is the idea. And Dr. Rubin said the same thing, that if you could just live till 90 and be pretty much relatively healthy and independent, and then, you know, you die, that would be a much better end than 10, 15 years of a lot of serious health problems that really take away from your quality of life and your independence as an older person.
Eileen, human clinical trials of GDF11 are set to begin early next year. Obviously, this will not be a parabiosis situation. How would human subjects refuse receive infusions of GDF11?
You know, it was, I mean, it's not clear to me, just because I think it's proprietary and they didn't explain it in detail, but I do think that it'll be similar to what's happening in animals, where they're receiving either injections or infusions, as you said, of GDF11, so that it's already something we have in the body. And as it was explained to me, since human bodies and mammal bodies have GDF11, giving them more shouldn't be an issue. It's easy for the body to accept and recognize, and they're synthesizing it, but it'll be bioidentical to what's in our bodies. And so you'll just receive some more of it than you usually have, and then they'll watch the effects on especially the vascular system, which it seems to have a big effect on, and in the brain, where new neurons and also new blood vessels are produced. So I think that's how it'll happen, and they'll watch them over time.
This work is part of a growing field of research known as longevity therapeutics. What kinds of other things, broadly speaking, are happening in this space?
There's a lot of companies in this space. It seems to be like the hot new biotech area. And there's a lot of big companies investing in it, like Google, and I think they have Calico Life Sciences and a bunch of other Altos Labs. I may have this wrong. I don't have it right in front of me, but somebody got, you know, billions of dollars of investment. So what a lot of some of these places, some of these companies are working on something called senescence, which is basically cell death. And the thinking for many years has been if you can kind of control the switches that turn cells on and off. And for instance, if you're trying to treat cancer, you want cell death in the tumors, for instance, where you don't want to, you know, and you want healthy cells or immune cells maybe that fight certain kinds of cancer to stay alive. So they're working on playing around with cell senescence, maybe controlling the rate at which our cells die, especially brain cells, which might have implications down the line, you know, for our neurobiology and cognition and things like that. And then there's work like with GDF-11, but with other substances and other drugs to try to regenerate and strengthen systems already in the body. And then just help us prevent age-related diseases like osteoporosis, arthritis, you know, diabetes, and of course, heart disease and stroke and things like that. So there's different ways they're attacking it, but they're all looking basically to increase the health span. You know, there's chronological age, which is that badge of honor, you know, that 70, 80, 90. But there's the health span, and we all know people that are, you know, 80 looks very different in different people. People age biologically much better than others. And I think the idea is to target the underlying mechanisms of aging so that aging generally from different ways, you know, attacking it in different ways will just be better and less painful and less of a decline health-wise.
So many interesting questions arise here. Like, if this turns out to work, would it be something that we'd ideally start at 30 or something we didn't need till we were 60?
Right. I wondered that too. Believe me, I was like, when is this available for a trial?
Sign me up.
And he was like, I would definitely, Mark Allen was like, I hear you. I'd be in on that too. But that is a really good question. I think there's also kind of moral implications with that too. Like, when are you too old to try it? And when are you not? You know, I don't know that they've determined that yet. In my mind, I keep thinking, like, if it was something that worked quickly, you know, maybe they would try it at all different ages to see. You know, you probably don't need it yet in your 30s or 20s, or maybe not even your 40s, but certainly as you approach middle age, 45, 50, you would imagine if you started it then, perhaps you could prevent a lot of the age-related illnesses that, you know, that come about. So, but I think that's still being determined because they're still trying to figure out how exactly it will work in humans.
What kind of work is happening at the NIH, National Institutes of Health, to see whether it's possible to slow or reverse the effects of aging?
You know, at the NIH, I'm not familiar with it, but I am. There is a program that's run by the National Institute on Aging. It started 17 years ago. It's called the Interventions Testing Program. And there's three different sites, and the research community basically, it's where drugs that are used for other things. One that's very well known is called, that I can talk about, for instance, is metformin, which is a drug that's given to people that are kind of pre-diabetic and diabetic to help prevent blood sugar from spiking. And so the research community will kind of tell the interventions testing program, these drugs are used for, let's say, seizure, diabetes, other things, but we think that they may have some life-extending effects. And then those drugs are tried on generally mice and rats, and they see if it'll extend, in mice mostly, to see if it extends their lifespan. Right now, there are four drugs that the ITP is working on, and four drugs that work well in one or both sexes. And there's three other drugs that have a significant or smaller effect on extending lifespan. One drug is called rapamycin, and Dr. Miller told me at the highest doses they've tested on mice, it extends the lifespan up to 25%.
Wow.
He said if you cured cancer in people and no one ever got cancer again after 50, the extension of lifespan in humans would be 3%. So a 25% increase in lifespan is huge. And as I mentioned, metformin is used. And I think metformin is actually in trials in humans now to see if it affects the aging process and their lifespan. What metformin does is it prevents glucose in your blood from spiking. This is my layperson's understanding of it. And that is somehow connected to how we age. And so there are some promising drugs that are being tested in this National Institutes of Aging project. And of course, in those other longevity therapeutic biotechs we talked about. But as for what the NIH has going on, that I don't know. But I do know about the interventions testing program, which has been around for 17 years.
Here's where things start to get interesting and tricky. Inventing and testing these therapies is one enormous challenge. You know, stuff that shows promise in lab mice may not do anything for humans. But actually, mm-hmm. the greater challenge might be getting FDA approval because, as you mentioned, the FDA does not define aging as a disease. Why is that?
That's right. That's exactly because aging. I as personally tend to agree with this. Aging itself is not a disease. It's kind of a part of just being a living thing on this planet. Living things age and eventually die. That's the way it works. So they don't look at aging as something that needs to be targeted with a therapy. And the folks at Alevion understand this, and at all of these different biotechs, they understand that. But you can target the mechanisms of aging. So the way into the market, the way Alevion's doing it, is they chose stroke, which doesn't have a lot of great treatments right now. So GDF-11 has shown in their animal research to really help after a stroke, whether it's a bleed or a clot, to help with new blood vessels growing in the brain and in the heart, regenerating them, and that helps the brain to recover faster after a stroke. So if you've lost some kind of motor function or cognitive function, it helps with that rehabilitation and that repair and they think in a significant and profound way. So if you got it into the market for that, and then you started using it for other age-related maladies that afflict the population as they get older, eventually you would have a therapy that is really, it might be being used for one thing, but in the end, it's affecting a whole lot of these mechanisms that underlie aging. Maybe it's affecting how, you know, the way the body processes sugar. Maybe it's affecting joint pain and other kinds of heart disease and things like that, cognitive issues, Alzheimer's, who knows? But the idea is you get it into the market for something, and then you start seeing its downstream effects. I guess. And so that's the hope. But you're right. You can't really ask the FDA to approve a clinical trial for aging because also just if you think about the logistics of something like that, just to see if a therapy would work, quote unquote, for aging, you would have to wait for all the potential problems of a person aging come into being. And that's going to be decades of waiting to see.
Does GDF-11 have any known side effects?
I think so far in animals, they haven't seen any. Whether that's the case in humans will certainly be determined by a clinical trial, for sure. Yeah. From my interviews with the folks at the company, they're certainly not expecting that because it's already naturally occurring. But you raise a really good point. In higher doses, who knows? And also, who knows how high the doses that they'll be giving in a trial will be. But I guess they'll determine, you know, a dose that is not considered toxic. Maybe anything at a high dose is toxic. I don't know. But certainly right now, they're not seeing anything that's having them pull away from doing a clinical trial in humans.
Eileen, you mentioned that they're looking at targeting GDF-11, if it works, at helping stroke patients. How does it happen that so many people who suffer strokes now are not getting what medical science considers the gold standard therapy?
Well, that's a good question. And that's because there is something that stroke patients can get now that didn't used to exist, but it's been around for a while. It's called TPA, and it's a drug that has to be given within 4.5 hours of the stroke event, and it has to be an ischemic stroke, which is a clot. It can't be a bleed. It doesn't work for that. And only about 20% of patients get the treatment because either they didn't know they were having a stroke soon enough and now it's too late, or they have underlying conditions that make it too risky for them to get it. And the 20% is actually really good. I talked to a stroke expert at Johns Hopkins who told me that when the drug first came out, it was like 5% that could get it. So 20% is good, but still that leaves a lot of people that just aren't able to get that drug, which helps, which has, you know, much better outcome after the stroke if you can get that. So that's why Alevion thought here's a really common condition that especially affects people that are older. And there's a treatment for it. It's not It's not able to be used by a significant portion of people that wind up with strokes. So let's see if we can provide something that would work as well. And that's why they targeted it. And also, stroke is connected to the vascular system. It's usually a clot in a blood vessel. And since GDF11, their preliminary research in animals has shown that, and in the lab has shown that it works to sort of regenerate and basically make blood vessels behave as if they're younger. You know, they're more elastic, they work better. They thought that would be a great disease to start with. It's one that doesn't have very good treatments yet, and GDF11 seems to work on the vascular system, so that's why they figured they'd target that.
Some folks are asking via email how they can volunteer for the study. Is that
Yeah,
open?
I'll let
Do you know?
I find out.
Yeah.
I think, if you're interested in being part of a clinical trial that's starting in Q1, I don't know how companies recruit for clinical trials, but you could start by visiting the company's website and maybe just send them a note saying that you're interested. I would imagine they're recruiting. I don't know how they recruit. They recruit at hospitals or medical centers or other ways, but probably contacting the company and finding out would be a great way to start.
And that company
And it's
is
just
Allevion.
Allevion.com.
Okay.
Yeah, like the number, right?
Elevion. Is that right? Yeah.
Yes, you're right. That is not how 11 is spelled.
Right.
Yes, Olivia, right.
So all this just raises so many interesting questions. The other thing I'm wondering is whether, I had a grandmother who sort of did that thing where she went like the Energizer Bunny and then died rather quickly at 90. And I would love to be like her. And I wonder, has
Yeah.
anyone looked into whether folks who age especially well, do they continue producing more GDF11 than their peers who are not as healthy? And is that because they've exercised more or taken care of themselves?
That's a really good question. I didn't address that in my story about this, but you're right. But I did talk to Dr. Allen about how the health span is so different in people. You're right, like your grandmother and then other people who struggle from 75 on that live to 90 with a host of really debilitating conditions. And I guess there are some things that, I was asking him what he does, since he does this kind of research all the time, and they all do. And it seems like there's a few things that have also been shown to extend life and health in animals. One is intermittent fasting, which is very popular now, where you limit the amount of time you're eating. Ideally, I think it is 8 hours a day. I actually try to do it myself, and I try to limit it to about 9 hours a day. But I think, don't quote me on this, but I think the idea is that it mimics the way people were, eons and eons ago, where you spent most of your day hunting and gathering food and a small amount of time eating it. Whereas now in modern day world, we eat constantly because we're bored or emotional or, we just want a snack or we want a hit of dopamine from the sugar. So the idea is you limit it. And that has shown also to extend the life, I think, in mice and rats. And everyone talks about exercise and how important that is because even though GDF11 may be connected to kind of revascularization or regeneration of capillaries and other blood vessels, so is exercise. So if you want that same effect, regular, rigorous exercise is another way to maintain that. And also, all the things you read about in the health limiting, like a plant-based diet, things like that. So there are things you can do now to extend your life before you get into the clinical trial.
So I gather, Eileen, the folks doing this work are having no trouble raising money around this from investors. Is that right?
Yeah, that's for sure. They don't. I think that so far they've raised. I might be wrong. I don't have the article in front of me, but I think $58 million, and they have another round of funding set to begin next year too. And I think there's a ton of money just going into longevity research because it's fascinating, and also it's something I think that's so universally. We want it so badly. All of us are aging, like we all want to age more healthfully. And I think it's really it's timely and important. It raises some issues. When I was writing the piece, I was thinking, if this became a therapy, like who's going to have access to it? Is it going to be really expensive? Is it just going to be wealthy white men? Is it going to, there's all kinds of, who would have access to this? And what would be the prerequisites? For instance, if somebody needs a liver transplant, but they have hepatitis and alcoholism, they're generally not a good candidate for a new liver. So would pre-existing health conditions knock you out of the running? Like, I think there's a lot of issues, but in general, there's a lot of interest in this area of biotech research because there's a lot of interest in making aging easier and healthier.
I had all the same questions, and I'm so glad you brought them up, and not a bit surprised being familiar with your work, because it, especially if this is going to be sort of, if it works, and these are all sort of far off ifs, right? But if it works, if it's approved to treat stroke, using it for other conditions like anti-aging would be an off-label use. And that means in a lot of cases, insurance companies may not pay for it.
Exactly. And I mean, this is, I'm glad you stressed that all of this is if, and all of this is preliminary, and Allevion isn't making any claims about its drug yet. But right, if it worked, also if it worked and you had stroke, I believe I read this, and it isn't their research, in research about metformin, that in some study, people that received this drug that were pre-diabetic, so you would imagine less healthy than someone that is not pre-diabetic, they wound up living longer than someone that was not diabetic at all. And the thought was that it was the metformin, this thing that prevents blood sugar from spiking. And I'm summing this up, and I'm a layperson, but that's what I remember getting from it. So let's say the GDF-11 therapy was approved for stroke, and the downstream effect was that someone that had a stroke wound up really being much healthier after receiving this therapy, you know, throughout their body. And that would be, you know, so there'd be that, like, oh, this works. And then you're right, if it's an off-label, it's an off-label use and it's under patent, it's going to be hugely expensive. And so who's really going to have access to that? And so I think there are a lot of moral and, you know, there are a lot of moral and ethical considerations. When the piece came out in the Times, there were a bunch of comments about the ethics of living longer, you know, in a planet that's already stressed, where resources are already becoming more and more scarce. Like, do we want that? On the other hand, if people are living longer but they're healthier, they'll stress the healthcare system less, even if they're stressing the planet more. So there's all these philosophical, moral, and ethical implications to the work.
This whole series that the Nexi piece and also the GDF-11 piece is part of is really interesting, but it puts you and your colleagues sort of into these interviews with the people who are forming these companies, excited about them, want to make money with them.
Yeah.
What does it take to sift through, you know, the natural exuberance of somebody who feels like they've got a great idea, but also kind of filter out the marketing speak, the BS that might come along with this?
I'm sure you know it, but you know, it can be a challenge because of course everybody's trying to pitch their company. And this series is called Upstart, and it's focused generally on startup companies or new companies that formed using science or technology that really didn't exist 10 years ago. So kind of interesting, like sustainable construction, like longevity therapeutics, which was not a biotech area a decade ago, really. So sometimes something will strike you as something you never heard of before, or, you know, and I think that's what speaks to me. When I look at different pitches, I'll think, wow, this seems remarkable, like the GDF-11 or something that just speaks to what I'm interested in. I am interested in learning how to age healthier. And I didn't realize buildings were, you know, causing global warming. And so if it's something that feels really novel and like a wow moment to me, I figure like it probably will be to lots of other people too. And then, you know, the marketing stuff, it's usually if somebody pitches a company as like the Uber of blank or the Airbnb, generally that means it's not quite as quote unquote disruptive as they think. And I can usually let that go.
It has been enjoyable though, reading this series, because it is pretty optimistic, right? There are exciting things happening. Some of them may crash and burn, but some of them will surely succeed.
Absolutely. And there's been a big focus. Lots of other of my colleagues have done pieces on how AI is being used in really interesting ways in education and in other places. Yeah, it is a hopeful series. That's a great way to put it, because it's also wonderful to see just the human ingenuity at work. Like, we're capable of so much amazing stuff. You know, there's so much intelligence and creativity and entrepreneurial motivation out there. And that is a really hopeful thing. It gives me hope that there will be ways to solve a lot of the complex problems that face us now.
Eileen Zimmerman is a journalist. Her article, "Can a Magic Protein Slow the Aging Process?" appeared in the New York Times. Eileen, it's really been interesting. Thanks for making time for us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You can like our page on Facebook. On Twitter, our handle is at KERA Think. We do hope that you will check out the podcast. You can find it wherever you get podcasts. Just search for KERA Think and then subscribe. You can also check out shows you've missed on our website, think.kera.org, and learn there about shows we have planned coming up. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.